We go back then, Britain.
Just from that first book of Kings in chapter 17.
And as you will see, what we're endeavouring to do
is not only to go into the life of Elijah, but into our own lives as well. And particularly, I think, when one thinks about the difficulties that life brings. It comes to all of us in some form or another. Some of us have ill health. Some of us have troubles in our own family. Some of us perhaps have troubles at our work. Some of us have troubles in our ecclesias. And, many of them are things that we haven't looked for. They're not things that we think are directly a result of our behaviour. And we can't always explain them by our behaviour either. There isn't a kind of divine ledger that worked out and says, well, it's about time he had trouble because of his sins. Although, for all of us, it is about time we had trouble if we were going to weigh up our sins, isn't it? You know, if God really gave us what we deserve, then we wouldn't be here. We know that. But then there are the other side. Who has sinned, this man or his parents, if he was born blind? And Jesus said, nobody's sinned. It isn't that. But that the glory of God might be shown. And this is what God wants to bring out of trial. We've got the choice. We can glorify God, or we can just spoil our lives. We can make the choice. Now, won't you have a look at this incident about the widow and the death of her child? It's a very short record, but you'll see in this record that really, humanly speaking, it was most unfair that God placed on this woman a burden. Indeed, of course, he blessed her by giving her life that now rested entirely on God's hands. Every day, give us this day our daily bread. It was her prayer. Every time she went in and took that handful of meal out, it was still there. And of course it is, isn't it? This is what our God is like. It's always there. He always provides. But now let's just look at her son falls sick. She's got no husband. She's living in her own land, but it's an alien land because she worships the God of Israel. And the child, how old, we're not sure, dies. And she comes to Elijah. What have I to do with thee, O thou man of God? Art thou come to call my sin to remembrance and to slay my son? I don't think that this was just bitterness in the sense that now she was blaming Elijah for her trouble. But she felt caught up in the life of this man, and she depended on him because the miracle had been wrought through his coming. And now, is this what you have brought by your coming? Let's just have a look at this matter of her sin. Art thou come to call my sin to remember? Now, the interesting thing about that, whatever it means, is she had an awareness of sin. She had a sensitive soul. If we wanted to be unkind to her, we might say, well, perhaps that child was begotten wrongly. But the record doesn't say that. It could be. That might have been her sin. But even that, you see, wasn't the end of the world. Supposing that had been true, she got over it. She had got over it. She'd come to God and he'd chosen her, if that had been true. But let's suppose it isn't that. This is a sense of her general sin, or some other specific sin. Elijah didn't ask. Give me thy son. God says that to every mother. It's the hardest thing, I think, for a mother to do. It's got to be done. Eventually, mothers like to keep their children as long as they can. But in the end, they've got to go. Fledglings have got to leave the nest, and they must go, brothers and sisters. I know we only have one child, and as he's grown older, I've enjoyed it, and my wife hasn't. I mean, in the sense that she would like to have seen him keeping smaller. I've always thought, well, now, the next stage is going to be interesting. And the wife always thought, but the last stage is just gone. Now, this is the difference between husband and wife, isn't it, really? But a man likes to see his child become a man, stand on his feet, be independent. But the mother knows when that happens that he's likely to leave the nest. But the process has got to take place. Give me thy son. You thought you could look after him better than God? Mothers do. Mothers do sometimes. Mary thought she could look after Jesus better than God. She had to learn the terrible lesson that he was God's son. And she would have to call him Lord. Give me thy son. And so Jesus went from Mary's bosom to the Father, that Mary might be saved. So with our children, then, if we can just carry them this extra step into God's hands, we've done all that matters. We should be anxious from time to time. Mother's eyes are everywhere. But God's are in every place, all the time, night and day. We needn't be anxious. And just have that faith and commit. And so he takes the child out of her bosom and carried him into the loft, laid him upon his bed, and makes his prayer. How was this child raised from the dead, brethren and sisters? Elijah raised this child from the dead. Isn't what the record says? Or at least by God's power. But that's not how it was done. By faith, widows received their children restored to life, says Hebrews. That's how this was done. Elijah didn't know why this had happened either. Goes and asks the question before God and takes the dead child up into his room. Oh Lord, my God, hast thou also brought evil upon the widow? It's come upon the land. All this famine has come now upon the whole of this northern region. Perhaps even stretched into Tyre and Sidon, but upon the widow, Lord. The Lord knew what he was doing. What was God doing? He was making a man of Elijah. That's what he was doing. This woman was going to be better in a matter of minutes than she'd ever been in her life. Not because she had the child back. Make a note of this, although that, of course, is the joy to her. But there's something else going to happen. Just follow it very carefully, and you'll see what a remarkable incident this is. And so he prays, and the breath comes back into the child as he stretches himself three times. God didn't answer him the first time or the second. The third time. Let it happen, Lord. So the breath came back into the child. That's the soul here, of course. And the Lord heard the voice of Elijah. That's how it happened. It was by faith. Elijah was met with a problem, and he grappled with it by faith, and three times stretched himself upon the body of the child as it grew colder. Until his prayer reached heaven, and God answered. But perhaps see before I finish why it is that God doesn't answer right away sometimes. You can hear the woman down below, waiting, pacing, wondering, weeping. And no doubt you can hear Elijah upstairs with the kind of prayer that he was offering that must have burst out of his lips. Perhaps hear the creaking of the bed. And Elijah took the child, brought him down out of the chamber into the house, and delivered him unto his mother. And Elijah said, "See, thy son liveth." And the woman said, "Now, by this I know that thou art a man of God, and that the word of the Lord in thy mouth is truth." Not a word about the child. In this divine record, this was the reason. Her faith was being made perfect. And she would never have had that experience if God hadn't taken her by the hand into the dark and through and beyond. Do we know this, brothers and sisters? Of course we know it. It's not the man who has roses all the way with the sun shining to whom we can go when our problem comes, is it? Of course not. We go to somebody who's been through it and taught. That's the experience. Why? When the first baby is on the way, the mother-to-be talks to somebody who has been a mother. That's it, isn't it? Of course it is. Doesn't go to talk to a school friend, the younger one, talk to someone else. There's tremendous comfort. And so it is in ecclesial life. Whatever kind of life it is, this is how God leads us. That's how she knew. That was the way her faith was made perfect. Hang on to God. He may keep you waiting. It may be three times. Maybe that the body of your prayers will feel as cold as that child was becoming until God breathes. Then you'll hear the answer. All right. Well, chapter 18. Here's Elijah now coming from a widow woman to a king. After many days. Now God says, go in the third year. Now that can't be the third year of the famine because the famine lasted 3.5 years. So perhaps it's the third year of his being with the widow. It's not altogether clear. Go. Show thyself to Ahab. Well, that was a request to make of a prophet at this time, wasn't it? Show yourself to Ahab. He'd been looking for him. Wanting to lay his hands on Elijah to put him to death. When Ahab comes now on a journey to meet Elijah, he doesn't know, but it's all arranged by God, a tryst. By God, all arranged. The famine is sore. Ahab and Obadiah out looking for pastures, looking for some place perhaps where there is some spring in the land, left some pasture for the divine, for the royal flock. And Elijah comes down. Ahab called Obadiah, verse 3, which was over his household. And don't ask why Obadiah was over the household. All sorts of people would have asked. He shouldn't have been in that household. He ought to have got out and done this and that. God put him there. And he was faithful under very difficult circumstances. Let every man abide in the calling wherein he is called. There are times to get out and there are times to stay. Sometimes the bad boss, we've got to work for him. Sometimes we have to move. God will help us when we have to make a decision. But for Obadiah, there was nowhere to go. Jezebel was a witch of a woman. There was nowhere to go. There was no center of worship that you could go to unless you went down south. And of course, Obadiah was tied as the servant of Ahab. But he put 100 prophets by 50 in a cave, and he fed them with bread and water, and that's what the ravens had done What God had done for Elijah, Obadiah was now doing it himself, at great risk to his own life. So there were more prophets than Elijah then. There were 100 others about, probably at the schools of the prophets. These were people of a righteous disposition. Obadiah goes to look for fountains of water and brooks, whatever it is, you know, the last trickle that you might possibly find. The brooks that never dry up. You can go through this land, and even where we've had droughts from time to time, people would tell you, this well has never dried up. This last year was a very good example on the West Coast, when you would hear people saying, this well, this brook has never dried up, this spring. Well, that's what they were looking for. And so they divided the land. Obadiah went one way and Ahab the other. It could have been the other way around, and Obadiah had gone that way and Ahab this. But it was all arranged. Elijah met Obadiah first. Have a look at the meeting. Verse 7. As Obadiah was in the way, behold, Elijah met him. And he knew him. He fell on his face and said, art thou that my Lord Elijah? You notice his address to the prophet, this wild man, on his face. This shows the reverence of Obadiah for his God. They'd looked everywhere for Elijah. He was like a will-o'-the-wisp, gone. They couldn't find him. He said, I am. Go, tell thy Lord, behold, Elijah is here. You can see the reply. Wouldn't have been quite as reverent as this in our age, but I suppose our expression of our own age that expresses this is, you're joking. You know, with that expression, it expresses exactly when somebody looks and knows that you can't possibly be meaning what you're saying, or they believe that you can't mean it. He said, wherein have I sinned? That thou wouldest deliver thy servant into the hand of Ahab to slay me? That the Lord thy God liveth, there is no nation or kingdom whither my Lord hath not sent to seek thee. And when they said, he is not here, he took an oath of that kingdom and nation and found thee not. Now you say, go and tell Elijah, tell Ahab, behold, Elijah is here. You surely you know what I've done to the prophet. Wherein have I sinned? You see how God's crying everybody in this experience. Obadiah had done something secretly. You know what Obadiah means? Obed. That's the beginning. It means servant. And he's got the name of Yah at the end. He's a servant of God. And God now, after all that experience in secret, sends him out to make his confession openly. Are you going to do it? And Elijah says in verse 15, as the Lord of hosts liveth, before whom I stand, the same expression, I will surely show myself. In other words, there's no escape from this, Obadiah. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. It came to pass when Ahab saw Elijah that he said unto him, art thou he that troubleth Israel? What a meeting. Elijah's answer is like a thunderclap. Not I, but thy father's house. And falls down upon him the denunciation from God. You followed Balaam instead of the Lord. Now gather together all your prophets, and let's have this out once and for all. Now there must have been something in this man Elijah that he could face Ahab absolutely alone and give his command in such a way that the king said, yes, yes, we'll do it. And so 850 prophets, I think it's 850 all together, gather together on Mount Carmel with Ahab, the king, and Elijah all alone. Now, I haven't got time to go into every detail in this chapter, much as I'd like to. But you've got the scene. got the setting of the prophets, 850, and they were no doubt in gorgeous apparel. They were dressed in the robes that Jezebel had given them. Some of these 450 sat at her table. In other words, they were fed by the queen. And so the decision is made, take a bullock, you choose. Choose the place of offering, and now call upon God. It's all right looking back and seeing what happened, but look on before it happened. Elijah did this by faith. This is how it was done. Oh, the arrangement was of God, but this had to work through Elijah. And he risked his life as the morning went on. They took their bullet and they dressed it and they prepared it and they gathered round and they called for fire. And they said in that strange, rhythmic chant, "Oh, Baal, hear us." You can hear it. It's got all the beat to it of our modern generation. In fact, it was a dance. Because, you see, in verse 21, that expression that is there, "How long halts he between two opinions?" That word "halt" is the word "stagger." And it's the very word that is used a little later in the chapter when they danced up toward the altar. It was a kind of rhythmic dancing. And so he just chooses this word, "How long halt ye between two opinions," to show their unsteadiness of gait, not knowing which to choose, whom to choose. And so they begin to call. And it's interesting that when Elijah mocks them, that they take him seriously. We'd never think this about the God of heaven, would we? But this is what they thought about Baal. He said, "You better cry aloud. Perhaps he's sitting down thinking." That's the expression here for talking. "Perhaps he's musing. You'll have to shout to disturb him. Bring him to himself." Or perhaps he has gone aside. And quite frankly, brethren and sisters, in our modern idiom, this won't be offensive to your ears, because this is actually what Elijah was saying to them. He said, "Perhaps he's gone to the toilet." That's his expression here. Gone aside. Now you imagine, this is what they thought about their God. He could perhaps be thinking, "Then you have to disturb him to bring him to." Or he had to go through all the natural operations of life. Of course, their God did. They married and they had children and they got drunk. This is what they thought about their God. But he's traveling. So they shouted and they screamed and they cut themselves and they danced right on until the time of the evening sacrifice and the blood gushed out. What a God. And that's what they believed about their gods, brothers and sisters. And they relied on them and worshipped them. Until Elijah now comes to the end of the day. About the time of the evening sacrifice, and he calls the people and he says, "Come unto me." And all the panic and the frenzy ends. And the prophets subside. And there's a dreadful quietness. And I just said, "Build the altar of the Lord." So they got the men together and they restored the altar of the Lord. With 12 stones, although there were only 10 tribes. Northern tribe. 12 stones, going to repair it. Like the 12 stones that were in Jordan when they crossed, you remember, or the 12 stones that stood at the foot of the mount when the covenant was made in the days of Moses, the stones representing a kind of altar before God. And so he's gone back and he restores them. They build a great trench round it. And the word that is used here for trench is like that word that is used for the sea, the laver that Solomon built, you remember, that contained 3,000 barrels. So there's the great trench all round. The altar, the wood, the sacrifice, the water. And you might ask where they got the water from. This is just how people do ask the awkward, they think, question. as though they could take the truth out of this record by just bringing a little problem up like this. The record of every ring of truth about it. There are indeed places on Carmel where water can be got. The very type of place about which I was speaking. For if there is rain at any time in the land, the mountain's the place to get it and to store it. But it were not that. There was the sea. And so they poured on the 12 barrels of water and made it utterly hopeless. And now without knife and without 850 prophets, my God is Yahweh, just like Jesus, all alone. And the cry goes up. And they hear a prayer of such a different quality. Not, O Baal, answer us. That's got no history to it and no promise in it. But words that go back, back, back into the caverns of time, right down to Abraham's day. Elijah draws near to the altar. O Lord, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in it. What a mighty prayer. And all the names of God of the bush come together. And back, back to the God who's not the God of the dead, but of the living. And as he heard the names of these three who slept in dust, pronounced before him, Abraham, Isaac, Israel, the Lord answered, hear me, O Lord. Nahab must have been standing there watching. 850 prophets. There was their bullet, still lying in the last rays of the evening sun. And here's this one, soaked with water on 12 stones with a great sea of water round it, and one lone figure, the effectual, fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Not for myself, O Lord. Let it be known that thou hast turned their heart back again. That's it. That's his mission. The mediator, the intercessor for the people. He wants to establish himself as prophet, not for Elijah's sake, but for the people's sake. The prophet was the servant of the people, and by his mouth came the word of God. And that's why he wants to be established, to put to shame the 850 liars who stood in the king's presence. Now, as he'd spoken in the days of Moses, so the Lord answered, and fire came down, and oh, what a mighty consummation this is. The great licking flames of God came down, consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust, and licked up the water in the trench. Nothing left. All for God. That was Elijah, wasn't it? And what a mighty answer. When Elijah turned, they were all on their faces, all on top of the mountain. All round. Was almost tempted to think that Ahab's face too, down to the ground. I'm sure it was. He was afraid of the fire of God. And the people lift themselves and say, the Lord. And they go back, and you see it's a capital L and a capital O and a capital R and a capital D. They've taken up the words of Elijah himself. This is the man. So they... This is the God, he is the God, the Lord, he is the God. And Elijah, swift, like lightning, to take the prophets of Baal. Don't let one escape. So the hands take 850 men and take them down the mountain to the brook Kishon. And there it flows with their blood, and Ahab is sent back to remember to Jezreel. I'd like to linger longer with that record. Oh, just one point. As they come down from the mountain, Ahab is told to eat and then to get to Jezreel. Elijah goes back to the place of the sacrifice. And there's the bullock of Baal. And nothing where God had consumed what Elijah had offered. And now he has a servant with him. And he begins to pray. It's going to rain, Ahab, he said. The rain didn't come just because the wind was blowing. Rain came because Elijah drew it by his prayers. Once, twice, three times, four times, five times, six, until the seventh. And then the little cloud of the man's hand coming up over the horizon. What a mighty prayer. Why did God keep Elijah waiting? Oh, this is the perfection of Elijah. Our prayers aren't answered right away. If we just said, Lord, help me, then went on with our job, there wouldn't be value in that prayer. Every mother who has a child knows that if she gives the child everything it asks for right away, it doesn't appreciate it. That's the trouble with our generation, isn't it? It's got everything. So it asks for more. It doesn't appreciate what it has. This mother disciplines the child and gives it at the right time and makes it appreciate what it receives. As many of us are brought up to do, there's something that you never, never fail after that to appreciate. I can't see the kind of plate that you see in the United States that after they've finished a meal, there's as much left on the plate as you and I normally eat. And it's just scraped into the trash can. Now, those of us who are brought up differently could never leave that on the plate. We'd never take it on the plate to begin with. And our generation is becoming a little Americanized in having too much. And so the rain didn't come with the first prayer. We prayed harder. Didn't come with the second until finally it was consumed in prayer. All together. Elijah was in the rain. Everything depended on this. God's name depended on it. And in the perfection of it, the rain came. Until then, it was seen what seven prayers will bring them. Heaven was black with clouds after 3.5 years. And Ahab raced in his chariot to Jezreel to get there before the rain. And this great runner of the Olympics, Elijah, trotted in front and arrived first on the Spirit of God. Eh? What a marvelous man he was. Well, our time's altogether gone, brothers and sisters. We could stay till midnight if we wanted to and just carry on our thinking. We haven't been to the Mount with him. Perhaps tomorrow at the breaking of bread, before you and I break bread, just in those minutes before the meeting when quietness should be our rule, perhaps we'll just turn over these chapters and see how he's now afraid of Jezebel. Please to the south and hear the voice saying, what do we sound here, Elijah? God speaks to him, feeds him this time by angels, not by ravens. He takes him down to the very mountain, takes him, it seems, to the very cave in which Moses stood. The revised version says, the cave. Almost as though he stood on the very spot that Moses stood, and the wind, the fire, and the earthquake rend and devour and shake the mountain. Then there's that voice of gentle stillness. When he hears that voice, he wraps his mantle around him. He went to the door. Not till then. That's when God called him. Gave him the message. Marvelous, brothers and sisters. Follow it before the breaking of bread. And say to yourself as you take the bread and the wine tomorrow, and think of the lone figure on the top of Calvary. with all the people of Baal round about him, and all who'd worshipped falsely and accused him. Think of this man who was of the seed of David and of Abraham, who cried unto his God on our account, and died in doing it. And respond to him in prayer and use his offices. That's why he exists at the moment, not merely that he's raised from the dead. Christ is risen, but he's a faithful high priest. That our prayers might ascend through him, that he might use us in our prayers, not only for ourselves and for our families, but for our ecclesias and for the work of God. We haven't begun to tap, brothers and sisters, we haven't begun to tap the power that Elijah knew about, and it wasn't because he spoke to him by his spirit, but because he prayed. And remember, says James, Elijah was a man of like passion as ourselves.